Hi, this is Mike Swanson of WallStreetWindow.com. I got a really special guest with me today, a new guest. I've got Olivier Tischendorf, who's based in Germany, is an independent full-time trader. He's been trading the markets actively since 1999, so it's kind of funny that that's... I've been trading a few years, just a few years more, but now 1999 seems like a long time ago. But anyway, Olivier's got a website, Tischendorf.com, where you know, I've been following it. He's posted his trading ideas. So thanks for taking the time to talk with me and everyone else.
Yeah, you're most welcome.
And it's neat to talk to someone, too, that's based in Europe. You know, I just know a few people over there that I talk with, and you're one of them, and, you know, I've been the past year playing European markets and doing things, but anyway, enough of me.
I've noticed your European picks, good stuff, by the way.
Oh, thanks. But it helps to know people over there too. So anyway, and I don't mean to talk about myself. Skip to what you do. You know, if you could tell people, you know, how. What type of trading do you do, and what type of setups do you look for?
Okay, so basically, I would say a technical trader. I tend to, I always say it's okay to have strong opinions, you know, macro views or opinions about gold, etc. But in the end, I tend to listen to the charts and do what the charts tell me to do. So basically, there's a few things I would like to touch upon to explain what I'm trying to pay attention to and what I try to teach those who follow my website. So the number one thing is be in control and stay in control. And what I mean by that is, you have to use stop losses, and that's the one means to be in control, and more importantly, to stay in control. So basically, I have strong opinions, and when I put on a trade, I use a stop loss, and. If I get stopped out, I lose my opinion, so to speak.
Do you have a certain system that you use to do a stop loss order? Like, do you usually do it a fixed percent, or do you do it at some point on a chart?
Yeah, it's a mixture of both. I mean, you don't want to be stopped out, so it needs to take into account the stock's trading personality. That is. You might use average to range, or, you know, depending on how volatile your stock is. Also depending on your entry. But I would say, you know, between 5% and 10%, something like that.
Right. And that's a good way to control, you know, the risk in your capital and so forth. But I think, you know, one thing about when you use charts and, you know, about the trading and investing and watching the news, you always come up as anybody does, or I don't mean you, but just in general, it's just human nature to try to figure out what's going on and try to think about where the economy's going and make predictions and so forth. And with the chart, and no one's right. I'm not right. That's over time. So that's what the action to use a chart.
That's the big debate about what technical analysis is all about. And I think most people make a huge mistake because they assume that technical analysis should be about predicting where price is going to move. No, that's not the case. With technical analysis, or the reason you should really pay attention to technical analysis is it's the best way to protect yourself and to apply sound risk management. And it's just putting odds in your favor. And if, you know, some trades work, some trades don't. It's not about saying, oh, if I enter here, the stock absolutely has to do this or that. No, it's you're putting odds in your favor. And if a trade works, you can trail your stop And if it doesn't work, you let yourself or the market stop you out.
Well, one thing about using charts is you can look at like a 5-minute chart or 60-minute chart to look at a short-term time frame and do basically day trades, or you can use long-term charts, even weekly or monthly charts, to kind of like invest for even for years, or you can do intermediate-term stuff. What kind of trading do you tend to do?
I tend to be a position trader. I consider myself a trend following trader, although it depends, but usually I like some kind of confirmation, let's say some kind of thrusting move, initial strength, then a consolidation period, and then the breakout of that consolidation period, that is a resumption of the prior trend, that is the trend leading into that consolidation pattern. So it's sort of trend following kind of stuff, and I like strong stocks with a tendency to trades looking for stocks trading at all-time highs, you know, this kind of stuff.
So you look basically for the strongest stocks and the strongest sectors.
Yes and no. I mean, talking about gold, you know, it's it could be a beaten down sector, and if you get, you know, if there's an IPO or new issue, you know, it could trade at an all-time high or close to an all-time high, and it doesn't necessarily have to trade near an all-time high, but if I would rather go for the strongest stock within a sector. So, talking about gold, Franco-Nevada is a good example. That was one of the strongest stocks, and it started to break down, and that was the sign for me that I'll just pull up the chart.
What's the symbol?
FNV, Franco-Nevada. It started breaking down at the beginning of 2013, January, February. Yeah. And at that time, it was still trading, let's say, pretty close to its all-time high. And it should have, you know, if the market or the sector would have been conducive to breaking to the upside, this would have been the go-to stock for long traders. And it started to break down, and that was the sign that the sector itself was going to get killed. So, yeah, and but it's still one of the stronger stocks. We were not supposed to talk about gold, right?
No, just kidding.
Just kidding.
Can't help it.
But, yeah, I know most of your followers are interested in gold, and probably most of my readers are interested in gold as well. I still think this is one of the stronger stocks out there in the gold sector, although it's not a pure gold play. But it's too weak. It's too weak right now, and
Well, outside of the gold and gold stocks, are there any particular sectors that really have your attention now as far as having potential upside to them?
You mean in the very near term, or...
Yeah, say what sectors look good for the next couple months.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think I have something which I call, you know, strong stocks watch list, which I go through at least, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, which contain about roughly 400 stocks. And the best looking charts are still coming from the small to mid cap biotech sector. This still looks like it has a lot of upside potential left in it. The big cap biotech stocks are not looking good right now, but I think in terms of the next month or two, small to mid cap biotech stocks, that's probably the place you want to be. Otherwise, alternative energy. You know, solar stocks are still looking good. They might need some more pullback. First Solar did a private placement recently, or secondary offering, and so. But they look like they will set up again. Maybe a few wind stocks. But wind stocks is difficult to trade in the US because most are listed in Spain, Germany, etc. But
I'm really interested, like right now, these solar stocks really got my attention because one thing I like to do sometimes is look for stocks that have been in like in a bear market and then are consolidating for a long time, and then they turn up into a new bull market. And they appear like they could be doing that because, you know, they were so crushed. And then just the past few months, they started to break out of these bases and have a lot of volume on it. But they are very, very, they're real volatile. Like today, TAN is the ETF in the United States, and it's up for 3.85%. That's a big move for an ETF.
That's true. Actually, if you want to touch upon talk about the solar stocks, a very good example is Solar City, which is a good example for what I was talking a few minutes ago. You have a completely beaten down sector like the solars, and then you have an IPO like Solar City, and then the solar stocks are starting to move up as a group, and then you have a stock like Solar City, which is printing an all-time high. So that would be the go-to stock. And then you had the additional Elon Musk factored into the stock. And the stock.
Yeah, it went from below $10 to 50. And that was at 37, so it's a pretty amazing move.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, if you have a sector moving up and then you pick the strongest stock trading near an all-time high or at an all-time high, the concept here is there's no overhead resistance, and then you have the potential for explosive moves. I'm not saying it has to happen, but the odds are very good because there's no overhead resistance.
And it's the best way probably to find stocks like that.
What do you mean to
find? Oh, I mean to find explosive stocks. Like this Solar City thing, it went from below 10 to 20 and then took a little over 2 months to break 20. And then, of course, it went up to 50.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of these stocks. You know, if you analyze super winners in the past, you know, if a stock goes from, let's say, 10 to, or let's say, 1 to 100, whatever, you know, it prints a new all-time high and then a new all-time high, and it keeps printing new all-time highs. So scanning for all-time high stocks is surely one of the ways to find potential super winners. But the real reason why they're moving is because there's no overhead resistance.
Right. So
there's no selling pressure. You know, when you have let's take the gold stocks. You know,
okay.
I mean, let's assume some cyclical bull market or bull market is going to develop, or let's call it uptrend. What's going to happen? Those who have positioned themselves already, you know, they once the stock moves up again, it's always a situation where people are going to say, "Oh, great! I can sell for a break even now."
And
this is producing selling pressure. So that's the big issue. If you have a stock that is not, you don't have this so-called blue sky potential.
Right. Well, as we wrap up the interview today, do you have any other last things you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, the first thing I talked about was this be in control and stay in control. Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to address is what I really like to pay a lot of attention to is mental capital. And when I'm talking about mental capital, it's obviously about protecting mental capital. Because, you know, once you lose mental capital, you know, it equates to stress. And typically, as a trader, when you encounter a lot of stress, you tend to make additional mistakes and then mistake upon mistake. And that leads to a vicious circle. So basically what you want to do is you want to avoid this situation from the very beginning. And again, the best and the most effective and the really simple way to do that is to use a stop loss, because then you avoid that kind of situation.
Yeah, I agree 100%. One other thing, too, I found is you've got to, like you're saying, you have to cut the losses, but also, and there's no, you know, there's no sure system to do this, but I think you also have to be patient at times to not do anything. So, you know, if for some reason the market doesn't seem to be providing you good opportunities, you kind of have to step back and wait till you see the setups that you like. And I think that can be a big problem.
Yeah, I think that's I assume you're talking about being able to stay in cash when there's not a great opportunity out there.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the big mistakes. People think they have to be invested 100% all the time, all year long, and that's a big mistake. I agree with you on that, 100%, as you said.
One last thing I want to
address, which I think is very important, and people tend to forget about that, is there's this market adage which says surprise moves in uptrends tend to be to the upside.
Right.
And obviously, the opposite is true for downtrends. Or you could also say, you know, strength begets strength, and selling begets more selling. So, talking about gold again, the problem I see, although I agree with most of what you say about gold, is we're in such a downtrend that, you know, if the surprise could easily be to the downside, and you know, in terms of, you know, one final flush out of weak hands, you know, this kind of stuff. But I'm not a bottom picker. I would want to wait for more confirmation and then go long, you know, wait until there's a clear indication that this is the bottom and not guess for a bottom, so to speak.
Yeah, it's something that I'm watching real closely. I'm curious to see. I think there's a good chance if it's making a bottoming formation, I think it should turn up, you know, by next week at some point. But it would have to break through resistance to do that. And I'm curious what will happen when the Fed meets on Wednesday, because a lot of times markets tend to make a move into that and then reverse. So I wouldn't be surprised, like, you know, the S&P and the Dow go up a little bit more into the Wednesday meeting than drop. And maybe, you know, I think gold could have, and the gold stocks could have, even if I'm right about them completing a bottoming formation, they could have one more little drop lower too. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's what happens after the Fed meeting.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But anyway, we'll have to see.
The thing is, you know, you have your opinion, you put on your trade, and then you have to decide for stop loss, and then,
right,
you know, let yourself stop out and then try again if you get stopped out. I think that's important.
Sure.
And not get trapped and then hold, do the buy and hold thing, and then the hope thing, etc.
Sure. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me and everyone else. We'll definitely do another interview soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Sure.